It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company. Is that a Kansas Jayhawk fan who offered to be interviewed? I was like, no. No, thank you. Especially after that nonsense of last night, right, Damon? Samford getting robbed of the game. It was funny, I saw... Well, you know what I think about Kansas people. They're all pukes.
Yeah, what was he going to talk about? Was he going to admit that they got out by the skin of their teeth?
Exactly.
Maybe if he was going to grovel and thank the NCAA for that victory last night, could have let him on for 10 seconds.
What do you think?
Oh, no. Was he puffing out his chest?
I'm not really sure. There's some sauciness to him. He's coming up again. I can guarantee he wasn't going to admit that they got handed a gift. That wasn't going to happen. You have to understand, Blue Bloods, and speaking of one of them, Duke is up 5 going to the half, so dangerous spot here against Vermont, 34-29. Fans of Blue Bloods, really in everything, because Blue Blood is always mostly a college basketball term. They don't realize the benefits they get from being Goliath. They're completely annoying.
Don't get me started.
So Kansas fans,
Duke, I'm still mad about 2008 with Kansas.
North Carolina, now that UConn is back, spending at the levels they used to spend during the Calhoun era. Let me tell you, I couldn't have had more people last year at the Sweet 16 who were working around the Vegas event over at T-Mobile who said to me, "Oof, boy, oh boy, these UConn people, they think a lot of themselves." And that's the way it is, right? And the funny thing is, in this conference that UNLV's in the Mountain West Conference, that school is mostly San Diego State. And they're not a blue blood, but, you know, with the proximity, you know, or in this conference, they believe they're a big deal. And they make the final of the Mountain West Conference tournament every year. Seems like it, right? So they can have an attitude, but... I don't know if you saw it. Did you see the tweet? And by the way, San Diego State was a winner today. New Mexico got destroyed. So the Mountain West having another one of those years where you're like, what is going on here? Did they let too many teams in? In the pregame, the San Diego State dude, excuse me, who's very concerned about the officiating every game, the guy who floated the BYU, the whole BYU theory, that there was a official... working in the Mountain West, who was anti-San Diego State because he had coached at BYU, that same guy today was sure to send out the referee notice. So I guess that's a thing now. San Diego State fans were very worried about getting a fair shake after Jane Ledee averaged 2.2 fouls a game the entire season. You've gotten a fair shake. Calm down.
That's ridiculous that now we need to be on the referee watch because you never know who used to be the baseball coach for BYU. They might have it in for us.
That is
fear-mongering, the greatest example of it. If someone, what do you mean by fear-mongering? A San Diego State journalist, yep. A San Diego journalist saying, hey, guys, we need to make sure we know who the officials are because you never know.
Yeah, the refs are against us. You play brutal style. You're allowed to be rougher on defense than most schools are. When they call fouls, they're not sticking it to you. So please cut it out. So we got Purdue just tipping off with Grambling State. We've got A&M and Nebraska going at it. We're down here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. A&M in that game has stretched it out to 14. It's 58-54, so Nebraska struggling. Wow. 58 points in the first half for A&M. Yikes. And we've got Alabama against Charleston. That's just starting off. Can we go back to last night and talk about, while the Yale upset is really cool, the Oakland upset of Kentucky is everything this tournament. to me, has played for. Yeah, it's to determine a champion, but to give the little guys a chance. This Jack Golke story is incredible. How much did you look into this about his background?
Not so much his background, but I love it when people pull up the old tweets. So I guess I did do a little deep dive on just...
Wait, you did?
Yeah, the old tweets, yes.
Oh, no. Did you do a search? I saw a search for his name and the N-bomb. I was like, what are we trying? Come on.
Yeah, I hate that.
Can we stay free of this for like a day? Right?
So, I hate
that
too.
Man, that guy hit 10 threes, but he's a racist when he was 14.
Let's find something.
We found out.
I hate when that happens when people, oh man, we'll try to find some dirt. But the one that I loved is that he had on a pair of boxing gloves, and he was talking about how he's, you know, built like Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Now, Steve, that might go over your head.
It does go over my head.
But for me, because I'm 27, we might be the same age. So I know that SpongeBob is something that he grew up on as well. So it's like, this guy gets it. This guy's fun. And he wasn't that active on social media. But I hope that he's going to, you know, gain those new followers. Because in his post-game press conference, we're saying, I know that, you know, those guys are going to get to the NBA, and I'm not going to sniff the NBA. Someone quote-tweeted that and said, little does he know, Pat Riley is working on a 10-day contract for him next season as we speak.
I know, right?
There's no – I mean, maybe Duncan Robinson has a couple inches on him in height, but he could be the Duncan Robinson for the Heat next year.
Again, I don't like doing white-to-white comparisons, but his story is similar because Duncan Robinson came from the lower ranks and pops up in Michigan, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what? He's making tens of millions of dollars as a three-point specialist in the NBA? This kid for Oakland was at Hillsdale College, Division II. He had one more year of eligibility because of the COVID year. No one in Division I offered him except Greg Campy at Oakland. And then the craziest part of the story is we're talking about a guy who gets brought in. Clearly, they brought him in because they're like, hey, you can really shoot the three. He winds up making 121 threes during the regular season, which is a really healthy number for a guy coming off the bench. And he took less than 22 attempts the entire season. So this coach basically gives, like, dude, go out. Shoot threes. If you got it, you got it. Keep shooting. If you don't, you're probably not going to play that much. But, like, is there any point in the season where the coach is like, pump and go once? Fake and go and hit a 10-footer. But apparently Campy's like, no. Yeah, do what you want, man. Just shoot three. And last night, once he got hot, I mean, you have to admit, down the stretch, some of the threes he was taking, you're like, all right, heat check. Slow down. But he kept hitting them. And the problem was, for Kentucky, then they had to pay so much attention to him that other guy started to go off.
Excuse me, because I only remember that one guy's name from the team. But at one point, number four on Oakland, he goes two possessions in a row where, you know, he's trying to get it going inside. And I say, why is this guy still shooting? And Adam says, he was the player of the year in the conference. I'm like, I don't care.
He's their best player.
I don't care who the technical best player on the team is.
Not
right
tonight.
Now, it's Golke.
Yeah. Not tonight.
By the way, Caleb's ready.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm going on and on. I'm sorry. Caleb Herring is with us. I'm sorry, Caleb. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, it's all good. I was enjoying the recap of what I've been watching. I was less concerned with Golke's past as much as I was concerned with his future. The guy's a public defender in training right now, and he's torching the NCAA. It's crazy.
That's why this tournament is awesome, and we see it every once in a while in football where you get a guy who kind of – you rarely come out of nowhere in a game, though. You know what I mean? But a guy who comes from out of nowhere in the kind of the consciousness of America, it's very important that we allow – teams that kind of earn their way in the tournament, even if they're smaller teams, to get in. But it also shows you that from athlete to athlete, opportunities are often just based on perception. And I mean, you know this, if you were 5'11, do you think you play college football, you get offers? I know you had a chance to walk on at Oregon. Like, do you get those offers if you're not 6'3 and a half, 6'4, if you're 5'11? And in basketball, I feel like that happens all the time. If someone doesn't fit the mold, then they're probably headed to Division II.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I think in elite sports, like when you, the higher up you get, the worse it is almost. And I think in basketball, it's even, I think, the worst of all the sports. There's kind of grown this sense of entitlement as if you're not lucky to be where you're at. I've said it many times that fortune has a lot to do with success or getting to the level that these guys get to be playing in March in college basketball Division I and on scholarship at any place. Because there's guys that I play with at the parks in Southern California that I think were the best basketball players I've ever seen in person that never got exposed to this type of stuff. So, yeah, for sure there's some element of luck to it and fortune, luck of the draw, whatever you want to call it, that you have to really step back and appreciate where you are sometimes. And these Cinderella stories, the Golkies, you know, the whatever Yale just got done, which was crazy. The kinds of things that happen during March Madness really highlight that for me. Like when the Cinderella stories start, it's like, well, yeah, the Cinderella stories today, but these are probably top-notch players that could have been playing at Duke or could have been playing at one of the Blue Bloods because if not for, you know, not having the right opportunity or somebody else having the better opportunity right in front of them. Just the timing of, you know, when you started school or who got high at the right time. But I love seeing these stories, these games, these moments for the lesser known person, the little guy, if you will, getting their time in the sun. Hopefully we let Golkie and those that are enjoying their 60 minutes of fame have it and live it out. Because I think what was really cool too about Golkie's story was in the post game press, he's like, you know, I'm probably not going to play NBA, but I'm having fun doing this right now. I was like, well, yeah, that's a very realistic outlook. Like, he probably won't be, but this is going to be fun. You're going to remember this forever.
This is why, it's also why all these folks out there who are like, it's the worst time in the history of college sports. No, it's the best. It's the best. Because of the transfer portal, kids who maybe get over-recruited at big schools have a chance to move down and excel and get playing time. Kids who are overlooked in high school get to work their way up. Maybe they play at four different schools, and eventually they land at a big boy school. And I mean, we can go back to what UNLV football was this year and all the success they had with transfers, either coming down or not having exposure and getting a chance, like Jacob De Jesus. I wish more fans, and I know the overlords of college sports are not going to look at it this way, but I wish people kind of put themselves in the shoes of the athlete who doesn't necessarily get the chance or isn't getting the chance and the opportunity that's afforded by the portal.
The old guard refuses to let go of the old ways. It's what you talk about with the Blue Bloods. They have this certain way of thinking of this is the way it should be, this is the way it's supposed to go. I think what the transfer portal has done is made more opportunity. Yes, there's opportunity for things to be wrong and things to go bad for your school, but there's so much more opportunity for these kids to get exposure, to get where they want to be, to get where they need to be, to flourish. Some of the best stories, even before the transfer portal became like this phenomenon that is, some of the best stories as far as college athletes and college guys being nationally recognized came from guys that transferred or made it from junior college to the college level, the D1 level. Cam Newton's one of those guys. Cam Newton doesn't happen if not for the ability to seek different opportunities elsewhere. And that may be putting a highlight to some fine things. There's a lot of players that were transferred before we started making NIL and the transfer portal the headline. And before everybody had access to it, I think is what really has changed. Everybody now can transfer, and it's not special circumstances. But I think people need to embrace it for all that it is. Yes, there's some bad. There's some things I wish weren't a part of it. But overall, the opportunities that these athletes are getting is a net positive for the sport. And there's so many storylines to track now. It's almost a year-round thing. Like the NFL with free agency. It's a year-round event to watch and track college sports now to see where guys are ended up and what program just got a massive upgrade or downgrade based on who transferred.
And there's the other side. You know, the other side, there are people who support the transfer portal, love the stories, also will call out coaches who can't manage their roster. You know, if you think about it, one of the greatest transfer portal stories resulted in a top 10 basketball player in the history of the NBA. Remember, Bobby Knight was so inflexible that he couldn't find a spot in his program and couldn't make Larry Bird happy. And Larry Bird went to Indiana State and they made it to the championship game. That's an example. He got a chance to get out and not, you know, be miserable or buried on the bench with Bobby Knight.
Yeah, I think to your point, I think one of your points in that is coaches have to be able to be adaptable. That has to be an attribute of a good coach. You're going to say you're an elite coach and you can't win unless you have things all your way to a team. That's ridiculous. If you can't recognize talent that doesn't fit your system and make that system work for that talent, then I think that's a deduction on the coach's part. So, yeah, it's exposing coaches in a lot of ways, because if you can't have it your way, then you're pouting about it or you're not as successful. I mean, not to name any names, but there's a lot of coaches that find themselves in that position where, hey, I don't get all the guys I want now, and now it's a lot harder for me to coach against the other opponents now. So now I want out. Now I'm kicking and screaming about it. So, I mean, some coaches, fortunately UNLV has a coach that has embraced it, and they've adjusted and adapted to the transfer portal and what it has been, has benefited, I think, greatly from it. But we'll see. We'll see how things shake out. And once it settles, if it just continues this way, if there ends up being more rules and regulations around it. But I think, like you said, coaches need to show that they're willing and ready to adapt to the system as well, too.
Caleb, when it comes to March Madness, I'm going to give you a couple of options, but which underdog story or would you want to see succeed more? The team that has the lovable big guy, because we got a couple of those with Colorado and North Carolina State. The team, let's say Oakland, that has the three-point shooter that can get hot. Or just the team that no one expected, let's say 13 seed and below. Which team would you want to see go further in the tournament?
Well, there's a running joke at my full-time job that I'm from Oakland, and there's a lot of layers to that. We had, lesser-known teams. We saw Oakland and Oakland, California. We just assumed, Oakland, California. Found out it was Michigan. Shows how much I know, right? But that's why I was rooting for them initially. But something about Yale just makes me want to root for them. And I know Adam probably just jumped out of his seat hearing me say that. But something about Yale's story, like the fact that this is only their second, I think, historic tournament win. If they were able to make a run, that would be kind of cool. That would be special. A team like that has never had any kind of success in terms of big-time basketball. I would love to see that. But I really just root for anybody who I don't know about who comes and shocks the world and defeats all. The thing I love the most is hearing announcers scramble to try to explain what's happening when the favorite number one seed is getting trounced by, like, the 13th seed. That's my favorite part about all of it. So anytime that has the potential to happen, I'm all for it.
Right now, as we speak, Grambling is down 13-16 to Purdue, and I am rooting so hard for Grambling State, because watching Zach Edey play basketball infuriates me as a short guy, I gotta say.
I don't want Purdue to lose again, though. That might be the one exception for this, because I think Purdue's had enough of being the upset team, the one that is supposed to get to the Final Four and losing early. I think they've had enough of that over the last few years, so I hope they can get out of the early rounds at least this year, but, I mean, we'll see.
And how quick into the game did you realize that the Oakland you're rooting for wasn't the Oakland you're close from?
I think it was like three trips up and down the court. We saw the projections. Everybody acts like they're experts. I'm not an expert in college basketball. When the brackets come out, everybody pretends they know exactly what's going to go. That was one of those things, just pick and move on to the next round. Like, okay, Oakland, where did I just lose? I just assumed that it was Oakland. Like, that's the only Oakland I know. I didn't know there was an Oakland in Michigan. Like, that didn't make sense to me. So, I found out maybe like four or five trips in, somebody mentioned it in one of these interviews on the sideline. I was like, surprised me.
Caleb Herring, former Rebel football player, one of the voices of UNLV football and a co-host of the Barry Odom Radio show, and a regular here on Cofield and Company. That's on the top of his bio for radio. So I want to go to the NFL for a second here. Take me into the mind of Justin Herbert. And I think every quarterback who gets the big payday has to deal with this moving forward to a certain extent. How are you feeling right now if you're Herbert and you just saw Mike Williams sign with the Jets after being released and your guy Keenan Allen get traded?
I feel a little bit abandoned, right? Like, you feel like maybe you're getting blamed a little bit, like maybe the system's changing and you maybe had all this promise of being the guy and having all these weapons around you. That's all you've known since you were a rookie, right? Like, you came into the league with one of the more high-powered offenses when healthy. And now all of a sudden it's all gone and it's just you. So you got to feel a little bit abandoned. I think you feel a little betrayed. You hire a brand new coach coming out of college, and all of a sudden he comes in and the team just changes the whole script, like flips things all the way around and drops him on his head. I don't know what it means for his future as far as is he still the guy, or is he able to produce at the level that he was, you know, with the numbers at least that he was able to produce with all those weapons around him. But you feel abandoned, I think, and I would say worried because, like you said, you just got the bag. Like you're getting paid now to be the guy. And now all of a sudden you might not be able to produce at the same level. So will you be looked at as a disappointment? Is there added pressure now for you to put up those numbers so people don't say, hey, he was a talent around him that got the job done, not necessarily him? I think there's a lot of pressure on Herbert. And much less, I mean, it's not like the division got any easier. I think the Raiders have potential to make a leap. I think the Chiefs obviously are running the division right now, but it's going to be tough sledding for the Chargers, especially coming off of missing the playoffs, firing your coach, and having a new coach coming from college. It's going to be a tough transition for Herbert.
Caleb, I want to get your take on this because there was a Bears player. He was on Up and Adams with Kay Adams, and maybe this is the NFL equivalent of having an interview with Taylor Rooks. But he said that Caleb Williams, he's a little Hollywood, and when he comes to the Bears, he's going to have to prove himself. I know that the number one pick has to earn it on the field, but should anyone on the team that has the number one pick say anything about the incoming player?
Yeah, I think so. I think that maybe not publicly, but I think, yes, there should be some sort of standard set by the players that are already there. Like, at the end of the day, you're a rookie. And it's not like I don't think he's going to be expected to come in and change the culture of the locker room. So competing and earning it, I think, are things that do need to stay true, regardless of who gets picked number one or if that person is Caleb Williams or whoever else goes to the Bears. You got to have that kind of standard. Now, if it's Caleb Williams, you're going to have to dial it back a little bit. Like shut up. Like, he's the number one pick. We're investing a lot in him. You're going to have to cater that message a little bit. I will say that the pressure will be on Caleb Williams to perform right away if the Bears do end up drafting him, because the franchise will get set back quite a bit for trading up to go get him if he doesn't pan out. So he does have to earn it. And Chicago is a different kind of fan base. Granted, they haven't won much in football lately and really in any sport lately, but they are a tough, knowledgeable fan base that will not tolerate, especially giving away Justin Fields after that time. And they want to win now. They're sick of losing. If Caleb Williams doesn't work out as the number one pick, then they're going to have a short fuse with him, and maybe not something that he's accustomed to with the kind of quote-unquote Hollywood personality that he's perceived to have. So he will have to earn it. I hope he understands that if that is a team that ends up drafting.
Again, we're talking to Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback and voice of the Rebels on radio. Caleb, keeping it in Chicago, Justin Fields moving on from Chicago to Pittsburgh alongside Russell Wilson. How long do you think the leash is going to be for Russell Wilson to maybe struggle before they say, hey, let's put Fields in?
I'm not even sure that there will be a leash. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Justin Fields is a starter week one.
Wow.
That to me is like very realistic. I think it could be a situation where Russell Wilson was, just because they acquired him prior to getting Justin Fields, people I think automatically made the assumption that Russ was going to be the number one guy. Like, that was who they wanted first. I think it could have just been, you know, getting Russell Wilson was sort of the plan to have as, in case Justin Fields doesn't work out. I think Justin Fields is a guy that I would like to give the keys as early as possible. He's a playmaker. I don't necessarily think that their offense lacked as far as staying on the field. I think they just didn't put up points. I think they need explosiveness from their offense. And Justin Fields, I think, at this point in his career provides that, even if the passing isn't as efficient as you'd like it to be. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's week one that Justin Fields takes the field as a starter for the Steelers. That might be a hot take, but I mean, what has Russell Wilson shown you really to indicate that he's going to be, I mean, his offseason workouts, those are impressive, but I don't think that Justin Fields should just be put to the bench just yet. I think he has a chance to be the starter week one.
Caleb, I appreciate it. Sorry to make you wait on hold for so long there. I got a little too excited about all the action going on down here. Excellent spot. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys. Take care. Enjoy the rest of those games, man. I'm going to do it, too.
Is Yale the number one underdog story to root for now?
I'm still going with Oakland.
Here's the thing. I don't think Oakland can do much from here. I think I might have to go with Yale, depending on other matchups, because Yale is playing San Diego State. So it'd be good for San Diego State fans, who I'm sure are salivating. You're like, oh, the bracket broke down for us. Well, we're going to make it to the Sweet 16. It'd be crazy to see Yale go out and, you know, drain like 16 threes on Sunday and move on. So, yeah, if you're tuning in, you haven't been paying attention to the madness today. Ivy League Yale, as Caleb said, picking up its second tournament victory in the history of the school. Took out Auburn. We almost had, you know what it was? That's not really an upset. I got to stop saying it. 8-9, 4-point favored. Florida Atlantic was pretty close against Northwestern. They were favored going into the game, the higher seed, but they couldn't get it done at the buzzer in regulation. They lost in overtime, 77-65. We're tracking Duke, 36-31 against Vermont. Purdue is early. And by the way, Vermont is early second half. Purdue is up 26-17 against Grambling. That's about 12 minutes in. Should I say and put the jinx on Charleston? I think Charleston, Alabama could go down to the wire, and it could be one of those games that's like the Florida-Colorado game earlier, where Colorado won 102-100 without going to overtime. I think that one's going to be tight. And then
Alabama doesn't play any defense. For anybody who's wondering why Steve says that,
yeah,
they don't play defense. I mean, so anything can happen.
The SEC was a track meet all year long, and I mean, I think generally the little guy wants to play in a game in the 40s and 50s to limit possessions, but in this case, I think Charlotte can run with them. And so far, it's 20-19 in that one. On the way back, let's get into the department of overreaction, because I saw some things said yesterday by Jay Wright about John Calipari and team building. In this era of college basketball, what do you actually want on your team? Do you want a bunch of top 50 recruits? Because there are times, like in the case of Kentucky, where you've got all these guys who are outstanding, are going to be in the NBA, but then they look up and all of a sudden you've got 18-year-olds playing against 22, 23, and 24-year-olds. Can you win championships doing that? Can you advance in the tournament doing that? It hasn't really worked of late, at least getting to the Final Four since what, 2015? Calipari's got the same formula that he's had for years, and it's not been working. That's a pretty big sample.
The Kentucky-Oakland game was a dynamic loss in terms of expectations of fans around the country. That was probably big, but overall,
probably.
Yeah, I mean, hey,
good job, Captain Obvious.
It keeps going.
Captain Obvious over here. That was a dynamic loss by Kentucky, Ernie.
Yes.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Come on, what do you think happened there? Kenny Smith caught off guard. I mean, you know they watched the Kentucky game, but was throwing a topic, hey, what's the biggest thing that's happened so far? Just got caught off guard?
Yeah, sometimes you just speak in generalities.
Yep.
And you're really not thinking, platitudes, and Charles called him out on it. He probably wasn't expecting to be called out on it.
And Charles gets called out on that stuff all the time.
Yeah, so it was good to poke fun at Kenny there. But we've all been in those moments where you're Kenny and someone calls you out on it. It's like, you didn't have to do that right now.
Yeah.
You know what I meant.
Yep. I don't want to go on an anti-TNT guys rant, because I think everyone knows how I feel about these guys on the tournament. But
I would
also
prefer the college guys on the big-time set.
Well,
that's just me.
We're also not in the masses. We're in our college basketball bubble. So I think we have to step back and go, you know what? Most people around the country, like, it's funny. I got Texas A&M and Nebraska in front of me. They're from the SEC and the Big Ten. And when you hear the delivery of the game, they're introducing the stories like no one's ever seen these teams before, and the majority of the country has not seen them. College basketball is such a niche sport, so it's probably good that Kenny and Clark Kellogg is there with them, so he can go more hardcore, but it probably is good that Kenny and Charles speak to kind of a base level and just try to be funny and just observe basketball while not knowing the rosters or the team's history this year at all. It's probably a better connection.
With the fan of the kid, I hate the term because it's such a pejorative term, but the casual fan.
Right.
Maybe I do. I know I have more college basketball expertise because I do miss the Gary Parrish or even Roy Hibbert, like that crew that they close out the nights with.
Yeah.
I want to see that crew on my TV. Where Rothstein, now he's a sideline reporter, and I'm not saying that he's not a versatile guy, but I like him. I like him on the desk. But right now,
they're for a different audience, and maybe that should be on an alternate channel. I thought Jay Wright started to hit on something very interesting with Kentucky, and this goes for a lot of the biggest name programs and the Blue Bloods. Listen to Jay right here talk about the upset of Oakland over Calipari.
The era of taking these young freshmen and trying to play against older players is over. It's not Cal's fault.
Okay, so the era of taking a bunch of freshmen and thinking they're going to win is over. It's not Cal's fault. Well, if it's over and Calipari doesn't recognize it, and this is a bold thing to say, like, hey, John Calipari, you know what? Getting four of the top 20 players in the country is not good for you. Like, it sounds counterintuitive, right? But they're four of the top 20 18- or 19-year-olds.
Yeah, so what he's saying, it's correct, but I get why he's saying that. We're going to play more of it in a second here, of why it's not Coach Cal's fault. Also protecting that blue blood coach fraternity there. You know, it's not your fault, Coach Cal, but it's just not working anymore. So he's trying to have his cake and eat it, too.
Give me part two.
It's they're 18 years old, and they're in this era where everyone's telling them how great they are. Just show up in college, and you're going to win. It doesn't happen that way. And the more the guys stay in college because of NIL, it's going to be tougher for young teams like this to be successful.
Now, that's a key. And by the way, that's another feather in our cap here on Cofield & Company, because I told you years ago NIL was going to change the game. I didn't know COVID was going to happen and guys were going to get extra years of eligibility and they'll play until they're 24 or 25 sometimes. But this whole era has morphed into an understanding of how to roster build. And maybe there's a point where Calipari, we'll see how Duke does. They're up 7 here. 14 minutes left in the game. Maybe there is going to be a point where Blue Bloods are like, you know what, we really only can take 3 max, maybe 2. And it's a real nice luxury to say, hey, we can only take 2 top 40 players. But maybe that's what you have to do, especially if they're not going to stay past 2 years, and a lot of them aren't staying past 1 year. I think it's been a great equalizer. I think the portal, guys being able to transfer, and then NIL, lots of people come to the table and paying for older players. Like, there's a value in getting a junior or senior who's been around. And there are some coaches out there who just haven't adjusted yet, Damon.
Yeah, for Coach Cal, it's just not going to work out, because on teams that, let's say, are successful, let's say in the past decade, Jay Wright, where he won his first championship with Villanova, where maybe they did have Jalen Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo, but you also had the upperclassmen's Arch Diacono and Josh Hart, who were upperclassmen. With Coach Cal, he doesn't have those upperclassmen for those guys to rely on for that consistency when he brings in, you know, those top 20 freshmen. Right now, on North Carolina, they've only got one freshman averaging 7 points, and they're a number one seed. So that maybe that era is gone. But also, I think that the freshmen that he are bringing in, even though these guys, hey, they're NBA talent, they aren't as good as the freshmen of the past that he's brought in. Because if you still put his Anthony Davis team in today's college basketball, I still think that team's probably going to have a good shot to win the national championship. So it is also the way that college basketball is changing, but those level of, you know, top 20 freshmen that he's bringing in aren't as good as the ones from the past.
Maybe. I mean, Anthony Davis isn't the greatest example because he's an all-time player. You know what I mean? Like, having ever, like, hey, they're big Bradshaw. You got to measure up to Anthony Davis. Like, Anthony Davis is a – I know people are driven nuts by his lack of durability and missing games, but he is freaking awesome, and he was really good when he was a young player. Yeah, I don't want to get crazy with conclusions off of a Kentucky loss, but I do think the way to build when you can get anyone you want, you probably do want to have just a couple of freshmen and try to make a judgment call like, hey, they're going to be around for a while. And then what you spend your money on are older guys. Because the guys that you may pass on now, Damon, right, a top 50 player, you can kind of look at it like, you know what, 2 years in, guess who has a chance to get him? Kentucky, when he's looking to move up or looking to move laterally or looking for money. There's no exact science, because there actually are coaches who have done this. Like, I think Chris Beard, until, you know, he went maniacal in his relationship, I think Chris Beard was kind of building that at Texas, where he'd get a bunch of the older guys, a bunch of the seniors and juniors, but it didn't always meld together. And that, there's a danger in that too, right? Not every junior and senior who comes in wants to be part of a team where all of a sudden, hey, at the school, the conference just below them, or even at the bottom of the Power Five, they're averaging 17 a game. Like, bro, you know what? Your shots are going to be down. You got to play a lot of defense now, and you might average 11 a game. Not everyone's down with that. And that's, again, why I do not like to sit here and kiss the ass of San Diego State. And Brian Dutcher did actually kind of puff out his chest, didn't he, when he talked to us?
He did.
About a month ago. And he said, hey, there's a lot of NIL. There's a lot of teams out there with big NIL budgets, and they're not doing that great. He's like, I like to see that because it's not just about how much you're spending and who you're grabbing. It's about the quality of who you're grabbing.
It's the, when you want to pick and choose, you can, because then we can point to Miami last year, and that was all of what Boeheim even called him out, where it's, hey, Miami bought their Final Four team. So it's just when you want to pick which example you can for your side of the argument at any given time. But if I'm Coach Cal, I don't change anything, because I think that he likes that he can hang his hat on the fact that nobody's putting more guys in the NBA than me. So he's still going to be able to get those guys. And maybe he can just maybe rearrange that recruiting pitch when it comes to recruiting some of those upperclassmen, you know, from other ways around. If you come and you put up 20 points a game in Kentucky, you think the first round's not going to be there for you?
364-1100. We got tickets to Five Finger Death Punch with Marilyn Manson in September, MGM Grand Garden Arena. You can grab your tickets at AXS.com. The tickets are on sale now. We've got a pair of tickets, 364-1100. Caller 7-364-1100. On the way back, we'll get you ready for the Lady Rebels and Runner Rebels this weekend.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, before we get out of here, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, we'll get you updated on the games going on right now and the four games tonight in the NCAA tournament. This weekend, women's NCAA tournament is on, including the Lady Rebels. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But Runner Rebels play tomorrow, check that, Sunday, in the NIT against Boston College. Media availability today. I had a chance to, with the rest of the media, talk to Kevin Kruger, and part of this clip starts out with just him breaking down what Boston College is coming with.
Big, physical, play incredibly hard, shoot it really well, good experience. So yeah, it'll be a great challenge. Much like Princeton had a number of things we needed to do well, it'll be the same thing with Boston College. We're going to have to do a number of things well to give ourselves a chance to win.
What do you think of your defense with without Luis Rodriguez and Caleb against Princeton, and how much does it change in terms of a look now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you lose that much size and length, you just got to pick up the slack. But guys did that. Like we talked about it after the Princeton game. I thought, you know, the first half, I thought we were kind of did a lot of observing. It kind of felt like, and we were seeing how things were going, and we were playing really hard. We were just kind of I just felt that we could kind of. Just be a little more aggressive and a little more assertive. And second half, guys undoubtedly did that. But it's going to be some similarities. You know, we're going to, depending on how Caleb is, Lou's still with family. So, you know, kind of depending how Caleb is, you know, we're just going to have to be small and scrappy and figure it out. But everybody gave great minutes in the Princeton game and, you know, hoping and kind of expecting for the same. Guys are having fun playing for each other. They like competing with each other. So, we might throw up lineups and do things we haven't done yet. Who knows? But either way, we're going to have fun competing and have fun doing it. It's been a little while since we were in the postseason. And then going into the postseason and winning a game. And, you know, these practices and these preps, again, while they're not the NCAA tournament and everybody wants to be there, there's still a feeling of, you know, as you're getting ready that, you know, there's a finish line after each game, and especially if you don't win. And so you want to win and keep playing. So, you know, those are things you can't simulate. But I think it's great for the group. We have a number of guys that'll be returning, and so for them to get those extra practices and days together, and a handful of extra games, it's huge.
So it's been a positive so far. They got the victory at Princeton. That's a nice one. Kruger also talked about sort of the, I don't even know what he meant by that, but he's just talking about kind of the freedom now of, like, hey, there's. Nothing's really scheduled, right? You go on the road. You got a limited group right now. Who knows who's going to play. Hopefully some guys are coming back like Caleb Boone. Let's just go out there and get it done.
You know, just packing a bag, going on the road, playing basketball, and you, you know, wherever they tell you to go next, you go. And there was a, I think the guys enjoyed a little bit of that too. It was a, it was added some excitement to it. But again, the opportunity to play another game. I mean, we got a good group of seniors that loves to play. We got a couple seniors that missed some time. So they're really, I think, enjoying every day and every added day. And then again, you know, we had an unbelievable turnout from the fans the second half of the conference season. So hopefully as many fans as possible that were coming and supporting there at the end could get another game out of it as well. And it'll be a good college basketball game, a really good challenge for us. But I think there will be a good buzz and a good excitement in here.
How big was that game for Rob Whaley, who, you know, he's had the ankle turn for a while, playing against tough guys in the Mountain West, and he wasn't, you know, really excelling offensively. So how good was it for him to have a breakout game moving forward?
It was great and absolutely needed. You know, while Princeton wasn't the biggest team in the world, I mean, they had some guys that were incredibly strong and really did a good job, I think, of using their feet and trying to make it tough for them. So I thought it was a good challenge, but also great to see him have some success because his game, of course, we went on a good stretch there, a good run there in the second half, and a large reason was he was getting the ball strong, being strong down by the rim and getting some layups and getting some high percentage shots. So really good for our offense because, like we talk about, when you play teams like Princeton, if you want to have any chance to guard them, you have to have good offensive possessions. You can't just go down and take bad shots and then think you're going to go guard them well. So being able to get the ball down close to the rim with Rob and have him finish was a big part.
There you go, Kevin Kruger today in advance of a Boston College game at the Thomas & Mack on Sunday. That is a 6:30 tip. Caleb Boone update. He was out there. He did some work. Kruger said still iffy. Caleb Boone said, I want to go. I want to play on Sunday. But Kruger pointed out, maybe everything's not back. So, be a game time decision. And Luis Rodriguez was not there. Said still dealing with a family matter. So, I think it's probably a long shot that he would be ready to go or back with the team by Sunday. Lady Rebels, DeMond, 4 o'clock tip on Saturday. The call will be right here on ESPN Las Vegas. And I'm looking forward to this.
I am too, Steve. Like, I know I've made the joke several times this week, and I'm going to make it again. When Desiree Young said, hey, this is it's in the bag, I feel so confident about this team heading in because a lot of people, they want to gripe about the seed. The seed's not going to matter. The same way we talked about the Mountain West Conference where, hey, you're in the tournament, you got to win the game. You've got to dispel the notion. And I think that that's what this Lady Rebel team is going to do because they go out year after year, 3 years in a row, doing what you need to do, win the conference, schedule who you can, non-con. But eventually, it doesn't matter about the seed. You got to go out there and win. And I think they're going to be able to do that against Creighton.
Yeah, I pointed out earlier, Desiree Young speaks her mind. You also have to realize the women aren't speaking to the media as much as the men. This is not to make an excuse, but sometimes, hey, they're just going to say it. You know, they're just going to say it. And in return, they're also not going to get destroyed for sounding like they're being cocky because she kind of said something similar about winning the Mountain West Conference title. But here's the thing. She was a wallflower and didn't play hard, then you might be like, well, you know, now who's going to back it up? She will try to back it up. I'm not saying she's putting her life on the line when she plays, but when you watch her, you're like, oof, like throwing herself on the floor, just brutalizing the opposition. I think she's one of those players where in women's college basketball, you go against her and you're like, oh, she's only 6'1", and then all of a sudden she starts coming at you. Even if you are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and you're like, what is going on here? This player's kind of scary that I'm going against. So we'll see how the Lady Rebels do. Set up tonight here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. You can watch the end of the Duke-Vermont game. That one is going to go down to the wire. 10 minutes left. It's 50-44. Check it. 7 minutes left. And then Utah State's playing tonight against TCU. Last game of the night, a really good one. As you've got Grand Canyon against St. Mary's. James Madison upset Darling against Wisconsin. And then we'll see if Houston, number one seed, can get by Longwood easily. Thanks to all of our guests today, especially Curtis Terry, who sat in with us for about 2 hours. James, excellent job with the setup. And as always, thanks to Treasure Island for hosting the show. Enjoy the weekend. Get out and watch some March Madness and listen to the games over the weekend.